Hey, welcome to Hellbent, a feminist podcast for those who resist and persist. I'm Sarah.
And I'm Devin. And today on the pod, it is Russia O'Clock. We'll be talking about Don Jr.'s DMs with WikiLeaks. We'll also be touching on the breaking Al Franken news at the top of the show. And we have a great interview with former federal prosecutor Renato Mariotti.
Devin, lots of dense topics today, as per usual. But before we dive in, I just need a little levity.
Yes.
And I really, really need to talk to you about another stolen election, which was awarding of People's Sexiest Man Alive to Blake Shelton.
Okay, you can't see me, but I'm shaking my head.
A lot of people were making this joke on Twitter, but it was like the Electoral College handed Blake Shelton the win, but the popular vote really went to like Mahershala Ali, you know?
For sure, for sure. And then on our Facebook group, we were talking about like who our pick for Sexiest Man Alive.
Yes, that was a great thread.
It was so fun. Chris Hayes. I literally put Chris Hayes on there and I was like, I don't even feel bad about my crush on him.
Chris Hayes. Oh my gosh. What did R. Eric Thomas call him? Bespeckled Boothang?
Yes.
I think about that a lot.
That's how I feel
whenever I see Chris Hayes on TV. Chris Hayes, like I can't quit him. Like he
I can't quit him.
Bothers me sometimes because I think he has Michael Moore and Bernie Sanders too much. Like he books him and like Josh Barrow too much, but then I'm just like, you're so cute.
Your little glasses.
Yeah.
And then like the look on his face when he's interviewing Maxine Waters is just like perfect.
So great.
You know, I'm also a really big fan of Lin-Manuel Miranda, not only because he created Hamilton, but because he is very sexy.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many other dudes that they could have picked. I mean, there's Daniel Day-Kim, there's Idris Elba.
You know who? I've had a crush on John Cho since he was in American Pie.
So basically, you know, people, you know, like the joke was on Twitter, they picked the Electoral College winner and no one's happy. Okay, Devin, so let's get into some listener feedback, which we always like to start our show with. So what do we have today?
Brando tweeted, quote, hearing the details of the Roy Moore Dick Watery / evil on Hellbent, overwhelmed by the ickiness of it all. I need to bathe in bleach. And I feel that. It was a really difficult episode to do. And actually, Sarah and I, we actually took a break between the Roy Moore and Louis C.K. sections.
Yeah.
To like get some fresh air. And then like I vomited into my mouth a little bit. It was a whole thing.
Yeah, we definitely, that's 100% true. I had a hard time actually breathing. And that's why we had to take a break because I felt like physically constricted. Like I was having a physical reaction to it. And actually before we started recording this podcast, same thing. And I think it's appropriate to give a little content warning / trigger warning. I think this sort of dovetails into the Al Franken story. And I've been thinking about it a lot. And I think the reason why I have such a sort of physical reaction to it is because I'm someone who compartmentalizes things really well. It serves me well in terms of day to day, like going through life and dealing with shit, but then it comes up, you know? And, you know, I've dealt with sexual assault. And recently, it was actually last year, a couple of months before the Access Hollywood tape came out. And I still kind of gaslight myself about it because it, when I think about my experience with it, it doesn't seem as bad, quote unquote, compared to other stories that other women have shared. So it's like, am I allowed to call that sexual assault? Right. Is it sexual assault? I was definitely grabbed and handled against my will, and I felt unsafe, and I was in a confined space with a man who made me feel unsafe. And I think that's why I have these sort of physical reactions to these stories, because I sort of pushed my own experience to the back of my mind. I really don't think about it like on a day-to-day basis, but then when these stories come up, it's almost like there, you know?
Yeah, and I think that that's a common thing for women to feel like, well, is this sexual assault? Is it as bad? Do I get to, you know, feel this way?
Yeah.
And that's really hard, and I'm really sorry that happened to you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It's just, you know, I think it kind of goes back to what we were talking about last week in terms of Rebecca Traister. Like, I think the past few weeks and months have been both sort of exhausting and exhilarating. And, you know, something we talk about in our Facebook group, content warnings and trigger warnings are really important because, you know, a lot of women and just, I think, victims in general, because it's not just women. You know, this is really traumatizing and re-triggering. You know, I think let's talk about Al Franken. And again, for hellions who might feel triggered or traumatized, you know, we do want to give a content warning that this has to do with sexual assault. So a radio host actually came out with a story this morning that Al Franken back in 2006, so before he was a senator, she was on a USO tour with him. So he had groped her while she was asleep, and he had also sort of kissed her against her will. And he actually already came out with a statement about it. I don't remember what he said exactly, but he was kind of like, I don't have this sort of the same recollection of this story, but I'm, you know, I think he said, I'm sorry, or I apologize. And whatever, but.
Well, and there's a picture of this, right? So it was so blatant, and he thought so little of it that he literally had someone take a picture of him while groping this woman while she was asleep. And I really think this speaks to the fact that sexual assault and sexual harassment is not a partisan issue. It's a trash men issue. And there's like an extra level of betrayal on it for me. And it makes me so angry. Because we want to think of someone like Al Franken as one of the quote good guys. And when stuff like this comes out, it's just, it's always disgusting and horrifying. It's also just so deeply demoralizing.
It is.
In a lot of ways.
It really is.
Again, I talked about this back, you know, Jason Momoa had made a comment about, you know, getting to rape beautiful women in fantasy shows. And to me, it wasn't just the disgustingness of his words, but also the implication that women should be excluded from geek culture. Because that's, you know, that's the kind of culture we have in geek culture. And I think this speaks to the same thing. It's like, this is supposed to be someone who, you know, fights for women's rights, someone who cares, someone, you know, who I can believe in. And, you know, it's such a betrayal.
It is.
I think it just, it made me so angry. I can't, I like, how hard is it to not sexually assault someone?
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, and there's, I've seen people sort of, just to go back a little bit, I've seen people sort of debate like, well, the picture doesn't show him actually groping her. She says he groped her, okay? And he's mimicking him groping her. So even if the picture doesn't show him groping her, she says he did. So let's just, I say, I take that at face value. She says he did. And, you know, I thought my friend Rebecca Cohen made a good point. She said, if you feel the need to point out that Al Franken isn't touching Tweeden in that picture, stop. It doesn't matter. It's still demeaning and sexist. It's not a, quote, tasteless joke. It's deliberate gender-based public humiliation of a colleague. And I totally agree with you, Devin. I think it's extra hurtful and sad and frustrating and a feeling of betrayal when it comes from men on the left. Our whole sales pitch of the left is that we're trying to dismantle inequality of class, of race, of gender, of everything. And when we have men on the left who are harassing and abusing women, it's like, fuck, you're supposed to be better than that. You're telling us that you're going to be better than that, and you're fucking not. And, you know, I've seen people call on Al Franken to resign, and I completely 100% agree. If we're going to say we're going to be better, then we have to be better. And it does not matter if the people on the other side of the aisle have no fucking shame. And if you're worried about it from sort of a politics point of view, like if that's your concern... I mean, stop. I mean, women...
Just stop.
Women are constant... First of all, women are among the first to be thrown under the bus for the quote-unquote greater good. That needs to stop. But B, Minnesota has a Democratic governor. They're going to appoint a Democrat. Also, Congress is only like 20% women. I mean, there's plenty of qualified women who can take Al Franken's seat. Al Franken, from like a completely selfish point of view, was on my list of... quote-unquote acceptable cishet white men TM.
Me too.
And he's crossed off. Like, that's sort of my initial feelings. Again, these are sort of Devin and I's initial feelings. This story is sort of just breaking, but we did want to address it and discuss it because we both are really upset. Like,
I hope that, you know, the Democrats in the Senate take this seriously and that is what should be done. And we need to do the right thing, especially, I mean, again, I'm pissed, right?
Yeah.
I'm just so angry. This is about doing what's right.
Yep.
And if we don't do what's right, then why are we here? What are we doing?
Exactly.
But like we said, I thought it was an important story to touch on. And I'm sure there'll be updates. So on our end, we just have a quick update. We're taking next week off for Thanksgiving. So I'm going to visit my parents in Florida. And so, of course, we expect huge bombshell news to drop.
Yeah.
Because I'll be out of the state.
We will assemble like the fucking Avengers. If
yes, we will.
Robert Mueller, you know, foregoes
something
Thanksgiving
happens.
Dinner and decides right. to indict some motherfuckers.
So we will not see you at all next week, which makes us very sad. But we will be back the week after that.
Okay, Devin, so let's get into our main news block, which is, you know, Russia o'clock, our favorite time of the day.
Our favorite time
and
of
the year.
Day.
And this story dropped on Monday, a couple of hours after we recorded our last podcast, because of course it fucking did. Like, that's
right.
That's our life. Our lives.
Exactly. And we, when we were talking about this show, we were talking about what stories to do. And we were like, is the Don Jr. stuff old news? And I was like, well, you know, it's been a full 48 hours.
I
so.
Know. That's what's just truly bananas about this whole presidency. It's like, how are we even thinking that such a big story can be
old news?
But this is how quickly the news cycle moves. But, you know, it's our goddamn podcast.
So let's talk about what happened. So WikiLeaks basically slides into Don Jr.'s DMs on Twitter, which is such like the fact that I'm saying that on a news podcast just was a moment for me. I was like, we're talking about Twitter DMs here. Cool.
You know, great. What's really funny, though, is that in like 25, 30, 40, 50 years, when we're explaining this to our grandchildren, they're going to be like, what are Twitter DMs?
Yeah. Be like, sweetheart, I don't have enough time in the world to explain it to
I
you.
I know.
So let's just move on. Actually, Julia Ioffe at The Atlantic broke this huge story about Don Jr.'s correspondence with WikiLeaks. And WikiLeaks is a known Russian cutout and was the chief disseminator of the DNC's hacked emails and also John Podesta's hacked emails. So the TLDR of this story is that WikiLeaks and Don Jr. have been DMing since September 2016. And Ioffe notes that WikiLeaks initiated the contact and Don Jr. ignored many of the messages, but did respond to certain requests, which I think is kind of an important point here.
And just from like a timeline point of view, this is a couple of months after Don Jr. was in contact with that Russian lawyer about Clinton dirt. So it's like, it's not like this is his first rodeo into, you know, dealing with, you know, Russian actors.
Right. Well, and what's interesting about the WikiLeaks DMs is that they kind of like ramp up in their requests. So, I mean, at one point they were asking Don Jr. To leak Trump's tax returns.
Yes.
They wanted Trump to deny the election day results if he loses. And they actually put loses in like quotations, like if he loses, like you should contest it.
So weird.
And they also requested that the president-elect tell Australia to appoint Julian Assange as ambassador to the United States.
There's so much to unpack there.
I mean,
first of all, I don't know about you, Devin, but when I saw that they wanted Don Jr. to leak his father's tax returns, my first thought was that is blackmail. That is compromise.
Ostensibly, they said that it was so that they looked more balanced, that they weren't only leaking stuff about Clinton, and then the Clinton stuff would be more impactful because they would look neutral.
Which Caroline Orr pointed out on Twitter, like that's basically WikiLeaks full on admitting that they aren't neutral. They like to tout themselves as this like sort of radical transparency organization, but we all know that's bullshit. Like they're working. I forget what Hillary Clinton had said in October, but she was basically like, they're doing the bidding of a dictator. Anyone who thought these people were lefty heroes, like, egg on your fucking face.
Well, and the thing is Don Jr. was not the only one who knew about this. So he actually contacted and emailed other senior officials after he received the first message.
Right.
So Steve Bannon, Kellyanne Conway, Brad Parscale, and Jared the Kush Kushner. he told them all that WikiLeaks had made contact. And then the Kush forwarded the email to the campaign communications director, Hope Hicks. It just boggles my mind that everyone's saying that they knew nothing about anything. And whenever they met with Russians, they just talked about their children and nothing else. And now we have fucking receipts. Like, these people knew about what was going on as before this, but as early as September 2016. But like you said, that was months after the Trump Tower meeting where there were approximately 215 people in attendance, which happened in June 2016.
Well, then you have Jeff Sessions testifying before Congress this past week, trying to convince people after all this Papadopoulos stuff comes out that he has never lied at any juncture of this saga, because he's now just recalling all this stuff in real time. And it's of you are fucking liars. And also, if, you know, all these senior campaign officials were looped in to this WikiLeaks stuff, and at this point we know WikiLeaks is behind the DNC and Podesta hacks, like, their first call should have been to the FBI.
Yeah, if I were Don Jr., I'd be like, okay, while like dialing the FBI on my cell phone.
One of the most disturbing parts of that story, sort of going back a little bit, was the fact that on election day, they're telling Don Jr. to not accept the results of the election, which is like a bedrock of democracy, with peaceful transition of power and accepting results of an election. Like, I know that Julia Ioffe, when she was interviewed on MSNBC, she said that was the most remarkable part of the story for her.
Well, especially because we know that Russia's whole goal here was to kind of
sow discord
and undermine our democracy.
Right.
And knowing that WikiLeaks is a Russian cutout, and then this is the advice that they were giving Don Jr.
And Trump spent that the election was rigged against him. I mean, he was already sort of setting that up anyway.
So I kind of want to put this in a little bit of context. So let's go back to June 2016, where Don Jr. had gotten an email setting up a meeting with Russian lawyer Natalia Veselnitskaya. So she met with Don Jr. and, like I said, like 215 other people, including the Kush, Paul Manafort. And they had set this up on June 9th, 2016 at Trump Tower. So literally hours after that meeting occurred, Donald Trump held a press conference and he promised that more Clinton dirt would be coming, possibly as early as the following week. And to me, I'm just like, way to show your hand, asshole.
And there's another thing that does not seem like coincidence in this new reporting in The Atlantic that definitely makes it seem like Donald Trump Sr. knew what the fuck was going on.
Because, again, now let's fast forward to the end of September, early October of 2016. WikiLeaks reached out and said, we have this website called PutinTrump.org, and we have this password to get into the website because it hadn't launched yet. And then WikiLeaks contacted Don Jr. with that information and then tweeted out the link. And then Don Jr. then said he would ask around about the website. And the timing here is important because a couple of days after that happened, so that happened on September 20th, 2016, and on October 2nd, 2016, Roger Stone tweeted, and I'm going to quote here, "Wednesday, Hillary Clinton is done. Hashtag WikiLeaks."
Could they be any more fucking obvious? These fucking Nimrods. I swear to God.
I know. And then 5 days later, October 7th, 2016, that's when the Access Hollywood tape was reported on. And that same day, WikiLeaks dumped the hacked John Podesta emails.
And I think that was incredibly deliberate, because I think saw that the Access Hollywood tape was doing damage to Donald Trump and they wanted to sort of neutralize it in any way possible.
So here we have two Trump surrogates, Don Jr. and Roger Stone, both tweeting about WikiLeaks and information that came from WikiLeaks. So it's clear that WikiLeaks was successfully attempting to weaponize the information that they had in their possession. And then the story kind of goes even further. So then a couple of days later, on October 12th, 2016, WikiLeaks sent Don Jr. a link, wlsearch.tk. This was a link that people could search all of the hacked emails and hacked information that WikiLeaks had dropped so that people could, you know, I don't know, find it. 15 minutes after that DM was sent to Don Jr., Donald Trump himself tweeted, quote, "Very little pickup by the dishonest media of incredible information provided by WikiLeaks. So dishonest. Rigged system."
There's just too many coincidences.
Right. And then one more coincidence.
Quote, unquote.
Two days later, on October 14th, Don Jr. tweeted that same specific weird link, wlsearch.tk. So, I mean, obviously, like, that's not like WashingtonPost.com. Like, you wouldn't just know that link. So it's clear that he was reading and taking in these DMs from WikiLeaks and then kind of doing what they asked him to do. They asked him to tweet it out, and he did. So there's a very clear pattern here.
Yeah.
Where Don Jr. is in contact with WikiLeaks and is at least, you know, responding to some of their requests.
How many of these stories can come out, can we read until we're like, yeah, they definitely fucking colluded, you know? And right. I know that you and Renato get into, you know, the legal definition of collusion versus sort of like politically what that means. And Crooked.com's Brian Beutler gets into the sort of political side, and he's like, yeah, it's definitely collusion. Like, we can say that.
Right. And I think the title of the article, which I love, was like, "The dog that does not bark," right? Because the saying is like, if it barks like a dog, if it has a tail like a dog, then it's a dog. Occam's razor. It's Don Jr. It's Manafort. It's George Papadopoulos, this guy who like came out of left field and pleaded guilty to lying to the FBI. Looping in people like Brad Parscale and Hope Hicks and the Kush.
Yeah.
Like, it's all adding up and it's all painting this picture that looks complicated when you take it piecemeal, but when you kind of line up the timeline, it is very clear. It's such a weird time. And so all of this Russia stuff, I mean, Don Jr. WikiLeaks DMs are the newest piece. But like I said, like, this all connects back to the Trump Tower meeting in June 2016. And after each of these events, Donald Trump Sr. himself references like the situation, if not explicitly, then implied that he knows what's going on. Every day, millions of people go online to search for local businesses. Does your small business show up? When you create a website on WordPress.com, you make it easier for your customers to find you, to connect with you, to hear how you can help them. Your business needs an online home. It needs a WordPress.com website.
And I have to say, I have a super savvy technical partner in crime in you, Devin. But you do not need one to create a beautiful WordPress.com website.
Yeah, I feel like Donald Trump Jr. could even navigate the process.
Well, he might need to collude with WikiLeaks a little bit, or even Russia, let's be real.
Yeah. But even if Julian Assange wasn't available via Twitter DM, Donnie Jr. would have the support of the WordPress.com service team, which is available 24/7.
Yes. So get started today with 15% off any new plan purchase. Go to WordPress.com/hellbent to create your website and find the plan that's right for you. That's WordPress.com/hellbent for 15% off your brand new website. WordPress.com/hellbent.
Our guest today is Renato Mariotti. He's a former federal prosecutor running for Illinois Attorney General. He's also a frequent commentator on cable news. He's actually in the CNN green room right now speaking to us. And he offers sharp legal analysis on Twitter. And he's, like I said, he's in the green room. He spent all night doing interviews. And we are lucky to have him. So thank you for joining us, Renato.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
I want to jump right in. I want to talk about the Mueller investigation into the Russia stuff. We have recently learned that Donald Trump Jr. was communicating with WikiLeaks about, you know, dirt on Hillary Clinton and all of that. So does this communication put him into legal jeopardy?
So it's possible. It's possible it could. Obviously, the most obvious way that it could is if he lied to Congress about it, or if he ultimately, you know, if he lied to an FBI agent. I don't know whether or not he's been interviewed by the FBI yet. Both of those are crimes. That's the most straightforward way. Okay. In addition, there was this talk in the DMs about a password being given to a website. If he was foolish enough to go into a website or cause somebody else to do that without authorization, that is also a crime. It's a violation of the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act. So that's potentially a crime. I don't know whether it would be charged or not, but that's another potential liability there. Then obviously there are other, you know, the coordination that he was showing with WikiLeaks, you know, it's certainly something that could be looked at as part of something broader, but there would have to be more there. I mean, what was in the DMs itself is not, aside from what I just mentioned, you know, evidence of a crime. I think to the average person sitting at home was listening to this. If somebody in America worked together with somebody in Russia to do anything involving the election, like, that's a bad thing. And one thing everyone needs to remember that's listening to this podcast is not everything that's a bad thing is a crime. OK, there's awful things people do to each other that aren't crimes. So, you know, if somebody, for example, you know, heard that the Russians were going to interfere with our election or undermine our election and cheered them on, that isn't a crime, but it's an awful thing.
Can you speculate a little bit as to what's coming next in, like, Mueller's investigation? Who's next on the indictment list? How far do you think he wants to get up this food chain before he decides that he's not going to get any more?
Sure. So I think a couple months ago I wrote a piece for Politico called "Reading Bob Mueller's Hand." And what I talked about in there.
I didn't realize it was you.
All right. There you go. Well, before I ran for office, I had a lot more time on my hands. I used to write more. When I read that, I talked about how the Mueller investigation was really a bunch of separate inquiries into multiple different activities. So, you know, you cannot, you know, what Bob Mueller's not going to do is charge everyone in one grand conspiracy with doing X, Y, or Z. And your listeners can see that that's exactly how what's happened so far. So Manafort and Gates are got their indictment doing their stuff. Then Papadopoulos is over in another bucket doing his own thing. And that's how it is as a federal prosecutor. You don't just charge. If you're investigating, it can be anybody. It can be a street gang or a drug cartel or any or what a group of computer hackers. They all, a lot of times you'll have a number of different indictments that'll result. So what I would, so, you know, we've learned what the charges are against Manafort. Okay, there may be additional charges down the road. He can what's called supersede and add additional charges. There's also this piece with Papadopoulos. We don't know where that's going to lead. For example, we know he's communicated to this gentleman, Sam Clovis, who is co-chair of the Trump campaign. There may be charges that result there. We don't know. Then there's, you know, for example, I mentioned earlier in this podcast, the Facebook search warrant. That's a whole separate piece. You know, who knows who's going to be charged there? It could be individuals who are from Russia or otherwise overseas individuals, or maybe an American or two that worked with them. We don't know. Then there's that whole obstruction piece of the investigation. We don't know what's going to come of that. And in fact, the interviews appear to be ongoing. Hope Hicks, I think, is being interviewed this week, or at least a reporter was asking me questions about it. So I assume that that's the case. So there's a lot of different pieces going on. So what I would expect, I will tell you, I looked stupid a month ago when people asked me when will indictments come in the Mueller investigation. I'm like, probably 2018. And of course, we already had our first group of indictments. Of course, partly that's because the Manafort part of the investigation and the Flynn portion of the investigation both began before Mueller was around.
Right.
So they've been going for some time. So what I think, you know, the one piece that we know is pretty far along is the Flynn piece. We've heard that Flynn, I think NBC News reported that Flynn has been, that the prosecutors have said they have enough to charge Flynn and his son. So that's one piece we can expect in the not too distant future. That seems to be pretty far along if they already know they can charge. Then the question is going to be what else and how much else is out there. And that I don't know.
Right.
Like, for example, okay, you know, Hope Hicks is being interviewed. We just had Stephen Miller interviewed. One thing that you and I don't know, because we don't work for Bob Mueller, is what came out of those interviews. One thing that happens when a prosecutor interviews someone is you learn new information. So you might learn, oh, there's a bank account I want to subpoena, or oh, there's this person out there, you know, Jane Doe. I really want to interview her. So you can kind of almost like it's like a daisy chain. You kind of one interview leads to another, leads to another. It also could be that it's a dry well. I mean, there's certainly a lot of people. We know Ty Cobb and some of the White House lawyers believe the obstruction piece of this, which is a fairly substantial piece of what Mueller is looking at. They believe that that will be a dry well. If that is, then, you know, it is not inconceivable that, let's say, early next year, Mueller could charge Flynn and his son and whatever, maybe one other person, and call it a day. At this point, there's enough things that he's looking at that would surprise me, but yeah. I don't know but a fraction of what Bob Mueller does. So there's a number of possibilities out there. One thing I should add, and it's wonderful, this format. I get to talk in more detail. One thing your listeners should be aware of, though, is when indictments come, that is just the beginning, and then there's a long court process after that.
Yeah, I think we all wait with bated breath. So, so I also wanted to ask you about something completely different, but has been in the news. So The GOP seems to have this big problem with Roy Moore and these allegations of sexual assault and sexual misconduct. So not even trying to deny that he dated teenagers when he was in his 30s. And from a prosecutor, from a prosecutor standpoint, as I'm sure you've prosecuted plenty of people who've done horrendous things, do you think that there should be legal or ethical standards for people who are running for office?
Yeah. I mean, you know, frankly, you would like the voters, you know, you would like to think that if somebody is molesting underage girls, that they would be so obviously the loser in a race that they would have to withdraw. But, you know, I'll tell you, when I was in the green room earlier today at a different network at MSNBC, and I was listening to the Alabama Secretary of State, and he was talking about how it's not proven anything against Roy Moore, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, at this stage, all of this is beyond the statute of limitations. There's going to be no court, public trial of Roy Moore. And, you know, at this point, I think any rational person would see that Roy Moore, if this is really all a bunch of people are fabricating it, or a bunch of coincidences, you know, he's the unluckiest man in the world, right? Where all these people are conspiring, all these people, random women who've never met each other, all conspiring together, and random police officers, mall cops, everybody, all these stories about him, it's all sort of, all these people are, it's like some grand conspiracy. It's very hard to believe. But even now, people are saying that, you know, they with a straight face, that you can't prove he's guilty. So, yeah, I mean, frankly, one thing that we should do is we need to expand the statute of limitations for crimes like this so that someone like a Roy Moore has to really think hard. Do I want to continue in this race? Because every statement I make can be used against me. I mean, if that was the case, every speech, every interview could be used in a court of law against Roy Moore. You know, he's able to keep going partly because he knows he's out of the woods in terms of a criminal prosecution. That's what I think we should do.
I mean, I've heard some complicated theories as to what the GOP might do if he does win. But so, again, this is purely your opinion. Do you think he will win?
I hope he does. And I don't think he will, because I have enough faith in people. Mm-hmm. I mean, partly what you're seeing, too, is, you know, Doug Jones, part of the issue that Mr. Jones had is, no one really thought he'd win, so he was never going to get the resources, right? I mean, no one was going to be contributing money. Now everybody is, you know, rallying around him, right? You're seeing all of this energy. People around the country are donating to his campaign. Mm-hmm. So I suspect he probably will win. And then, you know, the question is, you know, how, you know, I'm assuming he'll be out in 6 years. But, you know, that's a big deal for the Republicans and the Democrats. You know, one seat makes a big difference in a Senate where there's such a slim majority. Now, another possibility, I think all bets are off if the Republicans say remove Moore from the ballot or officially and say or say vote for Moore. And if you do, we'll expel him from the Senate and replace him with this guy, right, whoever that is, Luther Strange or Sessions. Then Republicans in good conscience could vote for Moore, and they know they're really getting whatever, Strange or Sessions. Then maybe that changes it up a little bit.
I don't know how anyone could in good conscience vote for Roy Moore, but that's fine.
Yeah.
So you mentioned before that you're running to be the Attorney General of Illinois. And so I just wanted to ask you how state attorneys general can help kind of stop the Trump agenda and why you're running.
It's a great question. So, sir, you know, one thing that we're starting to see more of is state's attorney general going out there and being aggressive when the president is violating constitutional rights of people in their state. So, for example, the state of Hawaii has very courageously taken on the travel ban. Mm-hmm. And I think we're on the fourth travel ban now, or, you know, we're getting... God bless those the state of Hawaii for all that work. There's, you know, great lawyers who've been working on that, and you know that is tied that issue up in the courts, and it's still ongoing, such that the travel ban has not really been effective, and it's not gone. You know, it has not gone into effect. You know that what they're doing is ultimately not only delaying the implementation of the travel ban, but whatever ends up resulting. That results in, I don't think that there are, unfortunately, I think the court will permit some portion of it. Mm. But in the end, you know, it'll greatly restrict what Trump is able to do. And that's a good thing. And I think the same thing is, for example, denying the ACA's coverage of contraception. That was mm-hmm. something that there was a change. The state of Washington took the lead on that, which is fantastic as well. A lot of states joined. I know I'm part of Indivisible Chicago, and we were phone banking our current AG, who's not running again, to convince her to join that, which she eventually did. So, you know, for me, I will tell you part of the reason that I'm doing this, and a big driver of why I'm running is because, you know, up until now, I've written a lot of op-eds. You said you read one of them, but, you know, I wrote an op-ed months ago about, for example, how the Dreamers, the DACA kids, how the use of their information against them would violate due process. And I love writing op-eds, but the ability to actually sue and on their behalf is a lot more appealing to me than writing about it.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's too important of a time. I will tell you, you know, most former federal prosecutors are very careful about what they say in public. And, you know, they want to be a blank slate. So when they're appointed, they can easily get confirmed to something. And I decided that this was too important of a time to stay silent. So ultimately, you know, I've been out there speaking out, organizing, doing everything I possibly can, because I think this is such an important time that you cannot sit silent. So that's why I'm here late at night talking to you, and I'll be on a radio show after this, and anything I could do to let people know about what's going on. And I will tell you one message I'll give to your listeners, which I have given to my Twitter followers for months. Do not sit back and wait for Bob Mueller to save America for you. Get off your butts and save it yourselves.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm running for Attorney General. I want to be part of that too. I want to get out there and do something.
So can I ask you, if you become Attorney General, what is the first issue you'd want to take on? What do you want to start with out the gate?
Well, in my state, there's a few issues that are of big concern to me. In my state, the opioid crisis is a huge thing.
Yeah.
So taking on opioid manufacturers is high on my list. Mm. You know, another thing that's really high on my list in my state, the governor is trying to reduce coal standards to allow a coal plant that wouldn't otherwise be able to exist in my state to go into operation. That's something that I think is a huge problem. A couple other issues that are dear to my heart. I'm really into what I call economic justice and helping people who are struggling to make ends meet. So one thing issue people don't realize is that there's something called non-competes. When people enter contracts, let's say you work at you're a manager at Burger King, they literally will force you to sign a non-compete so you can't move to the next Burger King and try to apply for a job there. It's ridiculous. It ends up lowering everyone's wages because you can't compete and go to another place. Another issue like that is not, these aren't sexy issues, but they're important, is these arbitration clauses that the banks include in their contracts. So, for example, you sign up at your bank, at Chase Bank, Citibank, whatever, they insert these arbitration clauses so you can't sue them. That's wrong, and it's something the CFPB prohibited, but now the Senate has voted to remove that. If they do, that's something that, you know, I would like to challenge that as an unfair business practice in Illinois if the banks go back to forcing us into arbitration.
Yeah, I mean, we say on our show, local politics is sexy. So it's the stuff in your state and your hometown that really make a big difference. Last, Renato, on our show, at the end of every show, we do what we call a gratitude check. So we talk about something that we're grateful for among these fairly dark political times. So What is something that you're grateful for today?
Wow. I am grateful for the rule of law and the fact that we do have corporate systems and a Justice Department that is out there and that is able to still exist and still protect people. I mean, you know, thank goodness that we have a judicial system that stands up for people's rights. So all of us, I think, can have, a little bit of faith that, you know, that is still existing. And it gives us time and it prevents the country from heading into too much of an abyss while we're out there organizing and getting butts in gear.
Yeah, Sarah's gratitude check at least twice a month is an independent judiciary in some way.
Exactly.
I'm usually just grateful for dinosaur fossils, but, you know. thank you again for joining us. This was so fascinating. I had 1 million follow-up questions. So thank you, Renato, for coming on. And you can donate to his campaign at RenatoMariotti.com. And you can follow him on Twitter, which I highly recommend, at Renato_Mariotti. Thank you again for staying up late to chat with us, Renato.
Thank you very much. Real pleasure. Anytime.
Okay, Sarah, so that was a really dense interview that I did with Renato Mariotti and a dense Russia section. So let's get into our gratitude checks. So, Sarah, what are you grateful for today?
There was a lot of actually really positive news stories this week amidst the bullshit. So I had a really hard time picking one, but I had to go with another electoral one. And this one comes out of Oklahoma. So there was a new special election on Tuesday. So there's lots of elections that are happening, you know, even though this big one, quote unquote, was in Virginia and New Jersey recently, there's pretty much an election every Tuesday leading up to 2018. So there was a special election in Oklahoma, and the Democrats flipped another red seat blue.
In Oklahoma.
And so the Democratic candidate was 26-year-old Allison Eichley Freeman. She is a mental health counselor and an openly gay woman. And she defeated the Republican Brian O'Hara for Senate District 37, and she won by just 31 votes. So
when people say my vote doesn't count, I'm going to just point them to this story and be like, listen, your vote fucking counts. Go fucking vote.
Really fucking counts. Yeah. Oklahoma is one of the most consistently Republican states, and it's actually one of the only two states in which every single county voted for Trump. So it's like real red. And District 37, so that's in western Tulsa County, is, you know, definitely not super left-leaning. And actually, its residents voted for Trump by 39 points in 2016. And it also voted for former Republican state senator Dan Newberry by 15 points. So just a huge swing by all accounts. You know, I think it's just another example, especially at the state and local level, that Democrats are fucking coming. Like, we are here to fucking replace these Republican dickwads. And you know, that's what makes me laugh about all these sort of like Dems in disarray stories that seem to come from like the Beltway media, because especially when you look at these state and local elections, like we are showing the fuck up.
You know what I always think of when I hear like one of these stories and, you know, a Democrat flipping a red seat?
Yeah.
I think of the Jaws theme.
Yeah. And so it's just, it's great. I mean, it's a woman, it's a gay woman, it's a Democratic woman. I mean,
a young woman. She's 26.
A young woman. I know Run for Something just did a National Run for Something Day, and they recruited even more young progressive people to run for office. And so this is the kind of shit that makes me feel really hopeful and optimistic.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like we're laying the foundation for a better and more progressive future. And yeah, I mean, local politics is sexy. It's really, really exciting to see a Democratic groundswell at the state and local levels, especially. Yeah, so that was a fun story to read up on. So Devin, what are you grateful for?
So I am once again grateful for my home state of California. They are the first state to approve LGBT inclusive history books for grades kindergarten through eighth. So on Thursday, the California State Board of Education approved 10 LGBT inclusive history textbooks for K-8 classrooms, becoming the first state in the U.S. to do so. And the State Board of Education rejected two books that did not include LGBT history because it violates California's 2011 Fair Education Act. So not only did they approve LGBT inclusive history textbooks, but they rejected ones that didn't have it.
That's awesome.
And yeah, and the Fair Education Act from 2011 also requires that disabled people are included in history books. So these books included the history, you know, like accomplishments in history of LGBT persons and disabled persons, which is really cool. I mean, it boggles my mind that in 2017, California is the first state to do this.
Yeah.
But, you know, since this is where we are, I'll take it.
Well, it definitely does signal, I think, how far our country as a whole has to go. I mean, I think that just it kind of shows on a lot of different levels, you know, how much progress we do have to make. And
I just love this story, though. Again, this is where like local politics is sexy. This happened at the state level. The Fair Education Act was written by a state senator. This is where we can affect real change.
I love things that warm our cold feminist hearts. Except not really. You know, we got to keep our cold feminist cred a little. You know what I mean?
A little bit.
Just a little
right,
bit.
Right.
Like we've got reputations to uphold. I love that we both had sort of like state local politics gratitude checks.
Yeah.
I feel like now is probably a good time to plug ourstates.org, which is something
always
that we've done a lot. We haven't done recently, but that's a great resource to find your state and local reps and to see what bills are moving through your respective state legislatures. All right, Devin. So let's keep the good stories rolling and let's award our Hellion of the Week because it's Thursday and you know we love this section. Who gets to be our Hellion this week?
The winner this week is a representative from Los Angeles named Karen Bass. Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III had a hearing at a House committee on Tuesday, and he tried his damnedest to dodge any questions pertaining to his racist ass, but Karen Bass was having none of it. She was like, yeah, no, you're a racist motherfucker.
I live for the way Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III crumbles under pressure by questioning from women of color. Like he just cannot handle it. Like he melts.
It's like his brain short circuit.
It does.
She was asking questions about an FBI report that named, quote, black identity extremists that were, quote, intent on killing police officers.
Which is such bullshit. Can we just, pause. Like, what the fuck does that even mean? And this report came out like not long after Charlottesville. Like, are you fucking kidding me, DOJ? Fuck that.
Right. So she noted that the groups that they mentioned as black identity extremists, air quotes, haven't been active in decades. She also asked if about this term, black identity extremists, which seems to only exist in this one report. And she asked why there were no corresponding white identity extremists. And then she listed off some. She said, given that white supremacy is well-documented, well-researched movements such as neo-Nazis, Ku Klux Klan, etc., are they white identity extremists?
Crumbled under the pressure. Could not.
Crumbled under the pressure.
He could not handle it.
Sessions replied that there are racial identity white movements for sure, but he also said that he could not name them except in writing because he didn't want to rely on his memory. So,
Jesus,
which, Christ. Like, right, we all know that you can't remember anything, Jeff Sessions.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
But I think the best part of her questioning was at the very end when she asked how he would address the blatantly outdated and racist FBI report. And he said, I'm quoting, I can't make this up, I would actually be interested to read it. Ugh.
You are the head of the Justice Department. You are the goddamn Attorney General. You have not.
I know. Like, I know Sessions, Sessie-poo. It's homework, which is no fun. But this is your fucking job. So what you've basically told me in your discussion with Karen Bass, who tore you to pieces in about five questions, is that you don't understand your job requirements, you don't remember anything, you crumble under pressure, and you don't even read the shit that you talk about.
Jeff Sessions, again, should have never been Attorney General for so many reasons, but it's just like, I mean, it's just amazing to see how woefully unqualified this man is for the job. And I love the way Melissa McEwen put it on Twitter. She basically said that she handed Jeff Sessions his white supremacist ass. Like, that's exactly what happened. Like, she just, it was just like a perfect line of questioning, and she just backed him into a corner and just illustrated her point perfectly.
Well, and it's frankly, the fact that Jeff Sessions is the Attorney General is frankly insulting.
So insulting on so many levels.
Yeah. So
yeah, so our Hellion of the Week goes to Representative Karen Bass. I would also just like to say that the pockets of neighborhoods in which I live in Los Angeles is represented by a lot of amazing people. So my rep is Ted Lieu. Just around the corner is Maxine Waters. And then just around the other corner is Karen Bass. Like, we just got it covered, you know?
I know. And my rep is
Brad Sherman.
who is a cishet white man who looks like your dad's friend's accountant. But he also, like, pulls out some pretty badass stuff.
He's low-key, like, doing the damn thing. Because wasn't it him and Al Green who were the first to pull out articles of impeachment?
Yeah. I called his office and was like, thanks, Brad Sherman. You're the goddamn best.
All right, Devin, there's a lot of shit going on. What are some action items that our Hellions can do after they finish listening to the show?
First up, I want to talk about tax policy, my favorite thing to talk about.
but really, it's up there for Devin.
It's up there. It really is.
Yeah.
So we want you to call your congresspeople and senators and ask them to vote against the tax bill. It's basically a tax cut for the super rich and corporations.
Yeah, that's like all you really need to know is, like,
I mean,
no one benefits except the wealthiest. Like, TLDR. Exactly. Also, what's this new bullshit that Republicans are trying to pull with this, Devin?
Okay. So now I have to talk about healthcare again, which is probably my least favorite thing to talk about. Love tax policy, hate healthcare.
This is always what happens. Every couple months, we're like, oh shit, they're trying to kill us again.
I know. So Republicans slipped in this amendment that would repeal the individual mandate of the ACA, and that would strip insurance away from millions by 2019 and around 13 million by 2027, and that's according to the CBO. So that's some bullshit. Also, that's bullshit. Tax plan is bullshit. Steve Mnuchin and his wife went to a mint and held up a sheet of money.
Yeah,
held up a sheet of money.
This is like, I saw that picture. I legit thought that was Photoshopped. I was like, there's no way these cartoon villains are actually doing this. Like, I know that they're cartoon villains, but, like, they can't be this cartoon villainish. They are. We're living in an Onion article. Like, they have no sense. They either have no sense of how they're coming across or they don't give a fuck. It's always both. it's bananas because polling came out before news of this ACA, sort of like this, the individual mandate repeal came out. By basically a 2-to-1 margin, Americans do not approve of this Republican tax plan. And this was obviously before this photo of Mnuchin and his wife came out, too.
Now it's like 3-to-1, bitches. Yeah. I fucking hate this. We're coming for your seat, Paul
We're
Ryan.
We're going to repeal and replace your motherfucking asses. Like, I don't know what to tell you. Like,
I'm going to repeal and replace you, yeah, motherfucker.
So anyway, please call your reps and tell them not to kill you again.
That'd be nice.
I know that. Okay, so I have a list of senators to target. I know that Johnson came out as a no, which was kind of surprising. Collins is a strongly no. Murkowski, McCain, Flake, Corker, Lankford have concerns. So, like, if those one of those people is a senator of yours, just light up their phones.
Okay, so our next item is to donate to and volunteer for Doug Jones. So many women have come forward with allegations against Roy Moore. Just disgusting, horrible allegations. Like, sexual assault. One woman was like, he called me while I was at school during math class. Like, awful, awful shit.
So anyway, he has not stepped aside. It is still apparently a race in which Roy Moore could win. Let's not let any more sexual predators enter the halls of Congress, please.
Please.
So donate if you can, volunteer if you can. If you're a hellion in Alabama, the deadline to register to vote is November 27th. So make sure you're registered. Make sure your friends and family are registered. Pass it on.
Finally, we just want to remind everyone, open enrollment ends on December 15th for the ACA. Go to healthcare.gov and get covered if you're not. And tell your friends, you know, tell family members, tell strangers at the line in the grocery store. Everyone needs to know.
Yes.
It's a good one. And then getamericacovered.org is a great resource for that.
All right, Devin. So that was a mouthful. Lots to think about, lots to do. Let's end our show with a tweet that actually my sister uncovered that I really love. And it's from a woman named Martha. So she's at Marfa Schmott.
MarfaSchmott.
Yes.
She said, quote, one of my proudest moments at work was when a male supervisor came to my desk just to tell me, you look tired today. Without blinking, I responded, that's not a polite thing to say. And he left me alone for the rest of the day. Dare to confound men with your self-worth.
I love that so much. Dare to confound men with your self-worth is words to live by. Like,
to live by.
Forever.
Literally, like, get them tattooed on you.
That's going on my tombstone. I love it. I think we could all, you know, use a little boost for ourselves, because this news cycle has been shitty in so many different ways. I mean, it's been a lot. So, yeah. Again, like Devin said at the top of the show, we are taking the week of Thanksgiving off, pending Robert Mueller dropping some news, in which we will definitely assemble like the Avengers. But until then, we will be off, and we will see you the following week. So have a great time with friends and family.
Yell at your racist uncle.
And please keep yelling at your racist uncles.
For more information on today's episodes, including links to the articles we discussed and additional resources, you can visit us online at hellbentpodcast.com.
And you can follow us across social media platforms. We're at HellbentPod on Twitter and Instagram. We're Hellbent Podcasts on Facebook. And if you want to join our Facebook group, we are facebook.com/groups/dickwadsbegone. You can also follow myself, Sarah Lerner, on Twitter at Sarah Lerner. And you can also follow Devin on Twitter at Devin Handy.
We also have a Patreon if you would like to support us that way.
Yes, and you can find us on patreon.com/hellbentpodcast, and your support would mean a lot.